What's up, everyone?
Hey.
Welcome to another episode of Game School Online. How are you doing, Nestor?
I'm, besides the pandemic, I'm doing pretty well.
Awesome, man. It's been a long time coming, but it's great to have you on, of course. And as always, it's been a while. So this is how it usually goes, just to give you a little introduction. We go about an hour to kind of backward engineer your personal work. So in your case, Last of Us 2. And we're going to look over the levels and talk about your past experience as well that extends beyond just working at Naughty Dog, of course. So before we get too started, why don't you introduce yourself? I know I'm doing a poor job giving a background of you. Just introduce yourself to our viewers and listeners out there, who you are, where you've been, and where you're at right now.
Sure thing. I guess if you guys don't know who I am, my name is Nestor Carpintero. I actually know Brandon from back in art school. We both went to the same art school, the Art Institute of Orange County, which is located in Santa Ana. I don't think it's there anymore, actually. I think that school got shut down. But anyways, that's how we know each other from school a long time ago, I guess like years ago, like over a decade ago. And we still, you know, keep in contact. We chat, you know, back and forth and so forth. But yeah, I've been an environment artist for about, I think maybe 13 years now. And I think I've worked across like maybe multiple companies now. I kind of forgot how many companies I've worked, how many game companies I've worked for. But yeah, I've been doing like environment art for quite some time now. And initially when I started working in the game industry, I actually started working like maybe like smaller, like, you know, independent, you know, game companies. I didn't actually get to Naughty Dog from day one, graduating school and so forth. But I've been doing it for 13 years, and the industry has been evolving and changing and developing. I mean, throughout this entire time that I've been in the industry, I think like the first game I ever worked on was like a PS2 Wii game called Jumper, like a movie tie-in game, like maybe 13 years ago. And like the most recent game that I shipped now is The Last of Us Part 2, working with Naughty Dog and so forth. I'm still at Naughty Dog right now. I think I've been with Naughty Dog about a little over 2 years now, like maybe I would say like maybe closer to 2.5. But that's pretty much about me so far. But before that, I guess before Naughty Dog, I also worked on Marvel Spider-Man and an Insomniac. I was there about 2 years, and that was a fun game to work on, a fun project, but a different type of game from The Last of Us. The Last of Us is more like a linear single player game, and Spider-Man is more like an open world game. And it's different challenges when working on, you know, open world games and like maybe, you know, single player linear games. Before that, actually, before Insomniac, I'm actually going backwards. I just realized that kind of, you know, career wise, I'm actually maybe just started, you know, I guess, you know, which company I worked for first and how it got to Naughty Dog and so forth. But I'm, like I mentioned before, and before Insomniac, I was actually ready at Dawn. I worked on the Order 1886. I think I worked on that for like maybe like a year and a half before that game shipped. And that was a fun project to work on, art-wise and so forth. I think before that, I think I worked on some smaller games. Like I mentioned, I worked on a Jumper movie tie-in game. I think I worked on a few PSP games. I think I worked on a few ports like Fat Princess. I worked on a Tron movie tie-in game. I think it was Tron Evolution. I worked on a Wii cooking game when like the Wii was a thing a couple years ago called Order Up. That game, eventually they could get ported like the PS3 with the Move, and it did get ported to iOS and Android on mobile phones as well. I might be forgetting some things right now, but I think that's about it. Like, I guess, like as far as like, I guess companies that I've worked on and like the titles that I've worked on, and I guess being in this industry for so long, making an environment for like, I guess, a PlayStation 4 game as opposed to making it for something like a PlayStation 2 or Wii game or PSP game, it's just a completely different animal. One of the things that I've noticed, just working in the industry for so long, is that disciplines usually, or departments kind of usually start to specialize. when I started working in the industry, I think as an environment artist, I think I was doing about everything. I think it was just like modeling, I was texturing, I was doing lighting, I think I was doing some effects, but then I kept progressing, and I'm working on more on maybe complex games. I just noticed that like the pipeline is painting like the studio, it just started to fragment a little bit, and I guess, you know what I mean? I guess environment artists kind of got split into like maybe environment modelers and like environment texture artists. And we started having like maybe like actual dedicated lighting artists and so forth, and fully dedicated VFX artists. And yeah, like I guess like the going to like I guess a PS5 and like maybe the Xbox Series X. I'm sure that trend is going to continue more and more. It's going to be like more and more specialization. And I'm working on The Last of Us 2, I guess, which is the most recent title that I've worked on and shipped on.
It's been very impressive to kind of see your career trajectory, because I know you were the one of the few artists that I was really jealous of just being in the OC for so long, because I know there was only a good amount of us that stayed in the OC. Most of us had to go to LA. For my example, I went all over San Francisco and went to San Francisco a few times just to get these good jobs going, right? And even in LA, it's quite a stretch. I'm assuming you're living in near Santa Monica right now, right? Or are you still commuting?
Naughty Dog's located in Santa Monica, and studios like Insomniacs and in Burbank and so forth. So they're like in LA County. But yeah, worked across the different studios in both Orange County and in LA County. I've actually been living in Orange County the entire, I guess, like majority of my life. And I'm actually working at Naughty Dog, which is located in Santa Monica, and Insomniac, which is located in Burbank. I've actually been commuting to these studios that are located in LA. Even with my first shop, Collision Studios, they were located in LA, and I've been commuting from Orange County to I guess LA County. My commute to I guess Santa Monica is actually about 36 miles, like one way, like in the mornings. And it takes me a while. It takes like 2 hours to get there. But yeah, I guess one of the things that I've noticed is that a lot of the gaming dev community is like, I guess, in LA. If you live like in the state, majority, generally most of it's like in LA, and I guess it's like a small community in San Diego, maybe like a slightly bigger community in Orange County. And I guess you would know, like a maybe community just as big as LA, like I guess up in like the Bay Area, I guess towards some San Francisco and so forth. But I guess generally I've been working in Orange County. I've been living in Orange County and just working in studios in Orange County and I'm in LA. But yeah, I guess maybe in a way, I guess I am lucky. You know what I mean? Maybe I didn't say I didn't have to move. Maybe I just chose not to move. I guess when I was going through studios, I kind of wanted to stay, you know, keep living in Orange County. But yeah, for anyone else, there's more studios out there. It's like in different states and so forth. It's just a matter of if you're maybe willing to like make the move and so forth, like maybe like Texas or Washington State, and maybe like North Carolina. There's different studios throughout like the entire United States, but it's just up to like the individual if they choose to move or relocate to the studios. For some it might be easier than others, because I'm not too sure, but it just depends, I guess, like an individual. I guess current state, if you have a family and so forth, it might be a little bit more challenging to move out of state. But then, hey, if you're maybe you're not married and you're young and you're willing to move, explore like different state, why not? You know what I mean? I never actually done it, but it's just a little bit more, I guess, more practical if you don't have like a lot of weight in your back, you're willing to move or relocate to work at a different studio. But yeah, just in Orange County now. But yeah, I don't know if I'll ever move on there. Realistically, I would like to stay in Orange County, but just depends on like the gaming community and so forth, where like the actual studios are located, where I would have to go. But yeah, I guess in a way I have been lucky, you know what I mean? Because I've been wanting to stay in Orange County, and I've been living in Orange County, and I haven't had to move to anywhere else to work at a studio, because maybe it's just, you know, things just worked out in my favor, or I just kind of chose, or you know, I kind of made like the effort to stay in to stay local, I guess you can say. But yeah, the commute to Santa Monica is a challenge, I guess. Like right now I've been working from home, so I haven't actually been driving in the morning. So it's kind of maybe a convenient, nice thing and so forth. You know, save some time. I get maybe at least 3 hours back. I'm not having to drive to, like, the studio back and forth. So yeah, it's kind of nice for now. But eventually, when we go back, whenever that is, we don't know. I'm gonna have to go back to that commute again.
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest thing living in Orange County is we kind of fall in love with Orange County and get kind of spoiled. But with that comes with a very real possibility of commuting to Santa Monica or somewhere closer than that. Sometimes if you're lucky, what's that in between for Los Angeles? Marina Del Rey,
Long Beach.
A few studios out there. Playa Vista around that.
Yeah, area. Next, like maybe near like LAX and so forth. Maybe like EALA around that area, I think.
Exactly, but you're looking sure about a 40-minute commute, and it's not just very exclusive to Californians, right? It's a lot of these big companies, and I've said it many times before, mm-hmm. are kind of located in the central area. And of course, these central areas are like the most popular cities in the world. So they get really expensive. Mm-hmm. So most people live in the perimeter, which also means that you're commuting 40 minutes to get into the city or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. So now that the pandemic is kind of a thing and most people are working from home just like yourself, I think the one thing when I was commuting was that I was lying to myself a little, like saying it's not too bad. 2 hours. This is not too bad. 4 hours a day. No worries.
It's not that bad.
Pretty productive. But I think what I'll ask you is, like, now that you have yet a good 6 months at home, like, how are you valuing your time now that, like, wow, I mean, you know, that is a really long commute? Or are you having thoughts like that at all? Mm-hmm. Or are you just biting the bullet? Because Naughty Dog's a great company and you don't want to move.
Mm-hmm. I guess the time that I do get back now, as I'm actually commuting, I've actually have been sleeping more. I guess you can say I kind of been taking advantage of it. And I've been kind of like sleeping like 8 hours in now. Generally, I kind of sleep in like maybe 6 hours a day when I'm maybe commuting to like the studio. Usually, I would wake up at maybe actually I think the day before that I would go to bed like maybe like around 11:30ish or 12, and wake up maybe like around 5:30ish or 6. So I'm you know, and go to like the, take care of hygiene or work out and so forth, but smoke a couple of things at the house and then actually head out. But now I'm actually, you know, I'm actually kind of, like I mentioned, I kind of sleep 8 hours as opposed to 6 hours. I'm a little bit more motivated after work to like maybe turn on the TV or maybe work on a personal project or maybe play like a game on the PC or in the PS4 or Xbox or whatever. So yeah, I have a little more time to let myself do whatever I want to do with my own personal time. With the commute to Santa Monica, generally I was getting home around when I wasn't crunching, like I would say like maybe around 8 o'clock or like maybe like 8:30ish. And after like maybe like the 1 hour commute driving back home, I really wasn't excited or motivated to do much. I was just kind of tired, just like, you know, sitting in traffic in my car and also sitting in traffic in the morning to commute to the studio and like maybe sitting in the actual studio. I think when I was going home, I think I just kind of like, you know, browse the internet. And I think I might have watched like maybe something on TV and I got straight to bed afterwards. But yeah, now that I have more time, I kind of use that time to sleep more and like maybe do more personal things at home right now.
Yeah, I think the value of time is, I think everyone besides our industry are starting to realize, I think, that that there's only so little time in the day and there's so many things you want to do besides work. So I'm really curious how this is going to change the industry when we do have to come back a year from now, 6 months mm-hmm. at the earliest. Let's go ahead and get right into it, right? So before we even pull up Last of Us 2, 1886 mm-hmm. is one of those games that I still think one of the best looking games in our current gen. Was it it's a PS4 game, right?
Yes, it is a PlayStation 4 exclusive. Yeah, so it's kind of like a maybe like an early PlayStation 4 exclusive game. I think it came out like maybe like around a little after like a year after like the PlayStation 4 shipped. I think it was like February 2015, around that time. So yeah, very early in the Indium, the PlayStation 4, some life cycles. And it's, if you look at the game nowadays, it's still on my, still holds up. Maybe like what, 5 years later now, or what, 6 years later? It's still on my, it's still on my,
so yeah, why don't you do this, looking. Man? We'll, like, pull up your art station while I pull up a trailer, because there are some kids here who just didn't realize what games were like 5-6 years ago. But 1886 still holds up. Like you said, it's still very good looking. I think the art team over there did a killer job. And it was very evolving. At that time, and even now, right? Mm-hmm. Not to bash anything, but with even next-gen games like Halo Infinite, I still think it looks better than that. Right? Halo Infinite is not getting any flack for other reasons, sure. No, but like, it still stacks up against it, which is very impressive work. So let me pull that up while you pull it up.
Thing.
Yeah.
I'm looking at my art station right now. So I'm... people screenshots.
You can screen share it, and then we'll can share that. But the number one thing that I do notice with your basically rise in Naughty Dog, even though Ready to Dawn wasn't a Sony studio, you guys did have like a Sony workflow, is how I kind of make it, right? There seems to be a very segmented modeling, texturing, lighting pipeline. I don't know if it seems like there was a remnants of a lot of Sony people moving around these studios, including Insomniac. I don't know for sure, so maybe you can talk more about that, but I know Ready at Dawn had a very similar Naughty Dog workflow where there was, at least in last gen. So can you kind of talk about that as you pull up your art station and screen share it?
Sure thing. You want me to screen share what I'm looking at now?
Yeah, yeah.
Or you guys be okay, sure thing. Let me see if I can get this going on my end right now. See if I'm
Yeah, there you go. Perfect.
Is it up? Okay, cool. So I guess I'm right now we're just looking at the gallery for like the like the screenshots of like the level I worked on for the Order 1886. I worked on the it's been a while. It's the Black War Yards level. If you you play like the game, I forget exactly at what point in time you actually play like the game, where actually you play like the Black War Yards level. I don't remember. I think it was like maybe towards like the middle of the like the game. If you're playing like the game in sequence, I think it was like around there. But yeah, like I mentioned, I think I was, when I worked at Ready at Dawn, I worked on I think I worked in that company for about maybe 2.5 years now, just taking a guess. And I think I've worked on like the Order, at least when I was there. I think I worked on the Order for like maybe like a year and a half. They did start working on that game before I got there. I'm not too sure exactly when they actually started. Yeah, I got there, I guess, like during production of the actual game. There was some pre-production work, but I wasn't there at the time. And like you mentioned before, I guess I wasn't there at the time, but Naughty Dog, not XCC. Ready at Dawn has had a relationship for Sony for about like quite some time. I think when that company was funded, one of the original owners was actually came from Naughty Dog, and I think that's how they got that Daxter project, the Daxter PXP project, with the relationship that one of the owners had with Naughty Dog and Sony, and afterwards they actually moved on to like, I guess like two God of War games for like the PSP, and they were both very good games. They're probably like the two best or maybe best looking PSP games and so forth. But yeah, Ready at Dawn has always had a relationship with Sony. They're not owned by Sony. I understand recently they got bought out by Facebook. That's a whole separate story, but before that happened, they did have a relationship working with Sony and Sony Santa Monica Studios on the God of War games for the PSP. And working with Naughty Dog on the the Daxter PSP game. And I think one of the reasons that good is because he actually developed that relationship with these studios, and maybe working with these studios, Sony Santa Monica and Naughty Dog, which are both very prestige Sony studios, or just studios in general, like in the game industry. they adapted like the I guess like their pipeline, like their workflow and like their art style, you know, they would have to for them when they're making all those types of games and so forth. And I think that's how they have that pristine pristine art style like in their games. And I'm working on the like the Order 1886. I believe they secured that project because they actually had that relationship working with Sony and the three PSP games and working with Sony Santa Monica Studios. The Order 1886 was published by Sony Interactive and Sony Santa Monica Studios, so forth. They had that relationship. But yeah, they developed those techniques that I'm not sure if there's any wireframes on the I'm gonna keep going. But I think just working with these studios, they adapted that that art style, and not just that, you know what I mean? Just some I guess like the leads and so forth, they wanted to push, you know, like a high quality, good looking game. And it's just a matter like in any studio, I mean like the leadership that you work with, what they want to accomplish and what they want to do, and you know what I mean, like what reference they want to gather and so forth. But I wasn't there at the time, but at least like working in the Order 1886, I believe there was like a group of developers already at Dawn that actually flew to Europe, or like they flew to London and they were actually there, and they took I guess like several images and of when, you know, what actual, you know, London looked like, like in real life. You know, we actually used that as some as reference when we were making like the art for like the game and so forth. And I guess some those developers that actually went to I guess like London at that time actually brought back that you know, that experience and so forth. And you know, when actually some like the leads, I think all of the art leads went there, and they were able to actually work with the artists and maybe like developing and crafting like the environments and like the characters, the effects, like the lighting and so forth. And I think one of the reasons the game looks very good is because what I mentioned before, like the industry nowadays is just becoming like more and more specialized. Working on the Order was like a very specialized project. We had dedicated environment modelers that were generally just modeling the environments and taking care of like maybe any additional level art. So they were able to actually hone and I guess you can say push that craft, that discipline. And the same thing with the environment texture artists. The environment texture artists were just, you know, pretty much just dedicating to creating, you know, good looking textures and so forth. And they were able to spend maybe like a good amount of time to develop like a good quality texture, more like the actual environment artist, or excuse me, the actual environment modeler was modeling, the actual environment texture artist was creating texture. And you can do that because you're actually specializing. You're kind of splitting like the amount, like the disciplines too. But if you're working like maybe like a more if you're like an environment artist, more like an environment art generalist, actually like working on Spider-Man, we didn't really have like a specialized pipeline. When I was in Insomniac, I was like an environment art generalist, and I was kind of like modeling and texturing at the same time. And sometimes I just wasn't able to spend as much time as the texture as I would have, because, you know what I mean, I had to create the entire, you know, maybe like the rest, like the entire level, like the entire quadrants. And maybe it's some points of time, so I had, you know what I mean, I had to get it to a good looking quality, and like maybe not to like a super polished quality as we were, or as the texture artists were actually crafting it at Ready at Dawn. And actually, I believe when Ready at Dawn was founded or established, it was kind of like, I guess, it was kind of established or kind of funded based on like the principles that Naughty Dog established. I think Ready at Dawn wanted to be they copied pretty much everything that Naughty Dog was doing. I think that a lot of companies actually look up to Naughty Dog and maybe like the types of games that they make, you know what I mean? Naughty Dog's known for pushing like almost like everything in their games, like maybe narrative, you know what I mean? Art and animation, lighting, you know, code and so forth. I mean, they're Naughty Dog's like an elite studio, like in the industry that actually, you know, pushes, you know, everything within like the studio. Every single department pretty much gets pushed to make like the best work possible. So I think Ready at Dawn was actually able to adopt those fundamentals, just everything that Naughty Dog established to create the to like the Order, because like the Order is actually created with like the same art pipeline that Naughty Dog has, where we have like, you know, separate dedicated modelers, lighting artists, and texture artists to create these you know, nice looking, gorgeous looking levels and environments. And working on this project was a lot of fun. And We always didn't initially, when we're working in these environments, it was like a team effort, and we never actually, I guess you can say, got it right the first time. We were always constantly iterating and iterating what was there. We work with at least like the environment artists work with the like the level artists, excuse me, like the lead level artists, and like maybe like the art director and concept artists, and establishing these scenes, and creating like a story, and like in these environments that you you walked on and so forth. But it was a big in any pipeline, it was like a big team effort, you know what I mean? Several departments collaborating, and several departments, you know what I mean, having like input and creating like maybe like the best trying to create like the best looking game and also like the best playing game. But yeah, after that, Ready at Dawn moved on to Lone Echo, and I worked a little bit on Lone Echo. And afterwards, I actually went to Insomniac to work on Spider-Man, and I worked on that for about 2 years. Did you have any additional questions, Brandon, on the order?
When it comes to the Ready order and Lone Echo, I think the main thing for the viewers and the students that are learning this is that's why it kind of like categorize it as the Sony way, because God of War, Naughty Dog, and even though Ready to Dawn is not part of Sony, they had a very similar Sony workflow where the compartmentalize modeling, texturing, lighting into its own separate thing, and very rarely the artists do all of it. And kind of like what you were talking about in Insomniac, you were doing modeling and texturing, which was something I think I feel more used to, and I think the industry as a whole work in that way. Most of the studios kind of work that way. So my question is, with Lone Echo especially, right? So you went from a PS4 gun, and Lone Echo is one of the first AAA VR titles, really, right? Do you guys use the same workflow, or what were you discovering on that project? And if you don't mind, pull a little bit of what you have on the art station there, and we can take a look at that. Because VR, people who haven't developed before, is very challenging. It's kind of like a mix of developing mobile games and AAA. And there's a lot of cheating that goes in there with people expecting AAA visual quality, but like with mobile development cheating. And maybe you can talk more about that.
Yeah. When I was working on Lone Echo, I wasn't actually there to completion. I actually left halfway through through development before I went to Insomniac. So I wasn't there when the game shit. But I do know that when we were working on Lone Echo, it was pretty much the same pipeline the same art pipeline we were using on Lone Echo was the same pipeline that we were using when we worked on the Order 1886. We had separate allocated, dedicated environment modelers, and separate dedicated texture artists, and separate dedicated texture artists. And when I was working on Lone Echo, and I'm working in VR in general, is challenging because you're kind of VR is just like very CPU and GPU heavy, like, you know, demanding, like intensive. So you kind of have to make art that kind of caters to the idea that you're going to need like a lot of horsepower to run that game. Working on not also with VR, you know, in VR you're kind of duplicating like, I guess, like the frames and you know, to kind of duplicate and like the lenses. So you're kind of like, you know, rendering things twice in some ways and sometimes. So when working on Lone Echo, we kind of maybe had a, and things might have changed after I left and so forth, because I wasn't there to completion, as I mentioned before. But one of the things that I do remember was having, like, I guess, like maybe like issues with like the frame rate. We were trying to get the game to run at 60 frames a second, I believe. And with that, you know, came challenges. Obviously, if you want to run 60 frames a second, and you would know, I think you've worked on Call of Duty Advanced Warfare, you kind of have to tone down like the art. By toning down like the art, you kind of have to reduce like the amount, like the geometry. Sometimes like geometry can't be as dense as you would like it to be. And some of like the actual materials, like the actual textures, have to be reduced like in resolution. But when working on Lone Echo, it was kind of like a balance that we had to find, because everything is so up close. When you're playing like, I guess, like these VR games, you can walk up to like actual wall and look at the wall that's directly in front of you, and you kind of want to maintain like a sharp texture, like a sharp material to maintain some of that texture density, knowing that the actual character can get up close, you know, and I'll take a peek at everything, and like the character can actually, you know what I mean, nitpick every single little detail. But working on like the order, I think that we're trying to maybe like increase like the amount of the texture density and like the actual materials, like maybe trying to keep in like maybe a 1024s and 2048s idealistically, but also trying to reduce the amount of materials that we use. Like maybe if we were going to be using like a 2048 material like in the actual scene, we wanted to make sure that we use that material throughout the entire level and not just in one particular instance. Like, hey, we're just going to use this 2048 material and just assign it to this wall and just use it once. That wasn't the case. We knew if it was going to be like a 2048, we had to repeat that material throughout the entire level and make sure that we got like the most money out of it. You know what I mean? If it's going to repeat and so forth. So that was the idea of working in Lone Echo. We had to be conservative with geometry and conservative with the materials and being selective when using the materials. And I'm actually not too sure what other studios might be doing with VR, because I guess I've worked on Lone Echo. It's like the only VR game that I've ever worked on. I generally worked on console games, like maybe a couple of handheld console games as well. So I'm not too sure what other studios might be doing now. I worked on Lone Echo like maybe like 4 years ago. And I'm sure that the hardware has changed and like maybe like the tech has changed. And I'm sure the developers have a better understanding of working on like in VR, either with, you know, like the HTC Vive or like the Oculus or even like PlayStation VR. So exactly what developers are doing now, I'm not too sure. Right now I can only speak with my my experience at working in Lone Echo. But it seems the bar can keep progressing, and we'll see what they do.
Yeah, it's an exciting field. I mean, the hardware is getting better. The Quest is kind of like a step backwards from the high-end Oculus, because they were trying to make it into a mobile device, right? So you don't have like this high-end PC. Mm-hmm. I mean, but right now you can still plug those in into your PC, and it functions just fine. But the techniques, from what I've heard and what I've seen and what I've done, have been largely the same. Obviously, we're not using the latest and greatest tools like what you guys did on Last of Us 2. Right? It's kind of like a step back, still using forward rendering, lighting, baking a lot to kind of trick things. And just making sure that what you see or what you don't see don't actually get loaded as much as possible. So it's still very limited, but there are obviously a lot of good looking games that are really, really squeezing the cheat out of it. I don't know if you checked out Half-Life Alyx, but I think, to be honest,
no, have it actually. Echo,
yeah. Well, I think at least from the preview, you can see when I think AAA, I only think two game titles that comes to mind. It's mostly Lone Echo and then Half-Life Alyx. Like all the other games in between have been mostly for Beat Saber. You know what I mean? Like those type of games. They're not really reaching on high grounds for AAA, right? Not to say it's not any good. It's just, you know, when we're talking about graphic fidelity, there's only like 2-3 titles that I can really say, oh, these are really looking good in VR. This is actually getting somewhere. Yeah, so let's talk about your next jump here, where I know, you know, we're spending a bulk of time talking about your lead up, but I think a lot of this has to do with, you know, why you're working at Naughty Dog. I mean, I think your experience, especially at Ready at Dawn, I'm assuming here, really prepared you with the Naughty Dog's pipeline, because that's what you guys were using in house and replicating. So what we can do is we can pull up the Flooded City levels and take a look at what's over there. And Last of Us 2, and I would say first party Sony Studios, right? If it's not you guys, it's God of War, that seems to put a stamp on the last years of the console, in this case PlayStation. So Last of Us really shows, in my opinion, what the PS4 is ultimately capable of before moving on to PS5, right? So it looks great. And let's talk about that.
Sure thing. Yeah, I think
last time I read, there was like over 2,000 people that worked on this game, right? Outsourcing, in-house, contractors, et cetera. How big was the environment team in-house?
I guess with that question, yeah, I think I'm, as far as like everyone that contributed, I'm, to working on The Last of Us 2, I think that number sounds about right. But as far as like actual Naughty Dog Deck, the actual studio located in Santa Monica, I think we were, I'm just taking a guess on that. I don't know the exact number. I think we were like around maybe like 250 to 300 of my developers working at in Naughty Dog. And keep in mind, not all of us are actually working on like the game. You know what I mean? It's no secret that Naughty Dog has like the ICE team, which I'm not going to talk about, but that's a whole group of developers that I'm working something else. But as far as going to like the like the actual environment art department, where internally we're kind of known as the background department, but we're the environment art department. I think we had our team was around maybe like 50 developers, and that's including environment modelers, environment texture artists. I think it was around there. I'm just taking like a guess right now. I'm just I don't know the exact number, but yes, The Last of Us 2 was the reason that number was so high was because like The Last of Us 2 was set to be like the biggest game that Naughty Dog has ever made. So they had a ramp up to allocate to that amount of workload. You know what I mean? I think like The Last of Us 1 was like maybe like around like maybe. Taking a guess, like maybe like a 15, 20 hour game. And The Last of Us 2 was actually about 50%, like I guess like bigger than The Last of Us 2. So like the reason that number might be a little bit too high, you know, 50 is because, you know, we had to make a lot of levels. If you actually played like the game, I don't want to, you know, spoil anything and so forth. But the reason that number was around 50 is just the fact that we had to allocate to the amount of levels that we had to make.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it looks bigger. Design, art, sound, everything's bigger. Last of Us was a PS3 game, I believe, right? So it's there.
Yes.
Alone, you can kind of decide, like, yeah, it takes a lot more resources. And 2,000 is not too crazy, to be honest. It's actually maybe on the higher end of average, but... You're factoring QA, you're factoring marketing, you're factoring a lot of people in there.
Like outsourcing support.
Pure devs. Yeah. Yeah. But let's take a look at this. And maybe in the meantime, I can find a video that we can kind of cut back and forth. But you mentioned that you worked mostly on the flooded city levels. Not sure if that's the
official public name.
Yeah. Not sure.
Yeah, I think the retail name is flooded city.
The public name versus what we work on code names, but the cities are flooded or are pretty easy to find. But why don't you walk us through some of these images here and kind of talk a little bit about behind the process.
Are you going to click on the okay, so you're clicking on one now. Is that expanding?
I think it might have. Oh, there you go. Yeah, now it is.
This is some, like I mentioned, I've been at Naughty Dog for like maybe around 2.5 years now. And I think I worked on The Last of Us 2 for about 2 years of development. There was development, obviously, before I got there. You know what I mean? But I wasn't there at the time. I was in there at the pre-production time and so forth. I started working at Naughty Dog around April 2018. So and initially when I got to Naughty Dog, you know, I had like maybe like, some time to learn like the engine, like the pipeline, like the workbook and so forth. But afterwards, you know, after it was go time, if you look at this scene right there, this is actually kind of like the first level that I worked on when I got to Naughty Dog. Actually, the name of this level, I don't remember what the name of the level was in the actual retail game. But this is some flooded city, like into like the city. this is the like the first section that you start playing, like I guess when you're paired up with a partner, like I guess in game. I don't want to spoil anything in the like the game if you haven't played like the game. But yes, if you actually look at the like the building, like I guess like the left, it's kind of cut off. It's kind of like I guess has like these orange stripes and like I guess these some orange metal plates and some white metal plates. It was actually kind of like the first asset that I worked on when I initially got to Naughty Dog. That was like the first building that I made, like the first, you know, thing, major thing I made when I got there. And when I worked on like The Last of Us, what you as we look at these images, you know, these are obviously like the final retold images, but one of the things that we have to understand is when we work in these environments, when we work in these levels, it is an iterative process. We have like internal milestones. We have like alpha, beta, gold, and polished milestones. And initially when you conduct like your first phase, like your first iterate phase, which is like the alpha phase, the environment is never going to look that good. You're always iterating the like the level. You're always evolving it. You're always, you know, getting feedback, working with other departments. You know, things are always constantly changing, and things are always iterating and so forth. But as we go into the next scene.
So while you're going,
so actually,
this
location.
Let me ask you a couple questions. Yeah.
Go ahead.
So photogrammetry is one of the biggest thing in this current gen that happened kind of midway through, right? And I'm assuming this is on the texturing side, but, you know, as part of the modeling pipeline as well, how involved were you guys on that? Because I'm assuming you guys built up your own library to kind of help leverage some of that as part of your process.
As far as like the talking about the actual specifically photogrammetry, like how heavily intensive it was used like in the game.
Go ahead.
I wasn't there at the time when some photogrammetry was used throughout the like the game. And I think some of it, but I wasn't there at the time. I believe some of it was used like in maybe some some tree trunks or like maybe some tree bark. And I'm not too sure exactly what tech they used. Maybe if they took photos or what type of cameras did they use, because I wasn't there at the time. But yes, we did use some a little bit of photogrammetry to make like some of the textures or like maybe like some of the assets that you see in game. But we also use, you know, obviously, you know, Substance Painter, Substance Designer to create, I guess, like additional textures throughout the like the levels and creating assets and props and so forth. So they pretty much didn't care what, I guess, software we used to make like the textures as long as it looked good. But I guess you can say primarily we did use some Substance Designer like the most to create the like the textures and like the materials and so forth. But some artists were still like maybe poly painting and poly sculpting and poly painting, which is a technique that Naughty Dog heavily used for like maybe like last year I'm working on like the Uncharted trilogy and even like The Last of Us one. But towards some working on like The Last of Us 2 and Uncharted 4, I think kind of Naughty Dog kind of migrated towards that Substance Designer PBR pipeline, which a lot of studios are actually doing right now, which is not just like an exclusive Naughty Dog thing. But as long as the materials looked good, Naughty Dog didn't have an issue using with whatever software, like the texture artist chose to use. And yes, photogrammetry was one of the techniques that was used to make some of the materials or like some of the textures, some of these assets. But I'm not too sure exactly what equipment they used to actually scan the like the assets. I guess I'm assuming right now maybe they use 1-2-3D catch, because I understand it's kind of like a popular thing to use. I've never used it myself, but it's maybe very convenient and very practical, and I guess you get like some okay results. But photogrammetry was used a little bit, but generally we kind of use some like the texture artists were kind of generally using Substance Designer to create the like the actual materials to create like the actual like the textures.
It's always interesting to see, because Last of Us has been in development for a while, right? So obviously photogrammetry just kind of happened. And there's a lot of learning curve and setup, especially for lighting and material artists. There's a way to shoot it to make it usable. And designer is always, I think, very practical because it's within reach. You don't have to go outside. You don't have to find the perfect rock or concrete or mailbox, right? Although it has a lot of its advantages, it is a total different workflow. And unless production allows you to kind of press pause to kind of learn this stuff, most artists or developers who are trying to hit deadlines are just like, let me just use what I know and get this done.
Yeah.
So it's always tricky.
Yeah.
The beginning of a dev cycle is the most productive when it comes to research, but when you're in the middle of it, you're just trying to get things done. So you're not really looking for things or how to change things.
Yeah, I'm pretty much, I guess using photogrammetry and just like photos in general, it's like a huge time saver when you're working on the like the texture pipeline. Obviously, if you're creating like a material, like a texture from scratch, say I'm a ZBrush or I'm a Substance Designer, it's going to be a little bit more time consuming because you're starting from scratch and you got to build that, you know what I mean, that texture from scratch and you got to iterate and iterate and so forth. When you're taking a photo or using like maybe some scans using photogrammetry, you can, you know, I mean, edit or modify that texture like in Photoshop, and you can get yourself, you can save yourself like maybe, you know, maybe like a lot of time, just depending on the, how it's used. Like nowadays, yeah, it's just like a personal preference, what like the artist chooses to use in their workflow. And as we look at these environments, for anyone that's played like the game, I mean, like the game's actually set in Seattle, you know what I mean? These environments, these levels are, I guess, are based on, or were designed or blocked out or laid out on actual real life location. What you're looking at right now is actually the Seattle Convention Center. I forgot what the name is in real life. I don't know if that's like the actual real name, like in real life, but when you play like the game, it has like, I think it has like a different, for legal reasons, we couldn't use the, like the same real life name that you see like in Seattle. So we had to change it to something else, but it's actually based on the actual, the real life location, not just this particular scene, but just the entire level, you know, in general. And, when we were constructing these levels, you know, modeling wise and, I guess texture wise as well, we were actually, you know, using Google Maps and actually referencing like the actual, like the real life location to create the materials, to create like the textures and so forth, and create like the actual like the actual architecture.
What has been different from the last gen to current gen? That before there used to be like a level lead, right, where you're in charge of this level and you might have a few prop artists to help you finish this level for either a year or more, and maybe an environment artist will have two levels throughout like a 3-year production, right? At least for me, what I've noticed, and it seems to be the case here at 99, there's several level artists in one level, such as the Flood City, and everyone kind of has a section that they're in charge of. Is that true, or was it more everyone kind of had their own level to take care of?
When they assign, like, I guess, like a level to like a level team, which just consists of a modeler, environment modeler, and environment texture artist, idealistically, they want that team to have pretty much have ownership of the entire level. But as you're working like the game, you know what I mean? Lots of things change throughout production, and sometimes resources just get allocated and bounce around throughout like the levels. But yes, idealistically, they want like the team to work on the entire level throughout the entire production. For me myself, I can't say that for like, I can't speak for like the entire rest of the team, but when I worked in The Last of Us 2, I worked in the entire not every single level in the Flooded City, but I was primarily in the Flooded City throughout the entire time I was there, which is about 2 years working on the like the level. And yes, like I guess like the Flooded City level is one level, and it's, I guess, broken down into sub levels. And when I worked on the Flooded City level, I worked on maybe, I think it was like 5 or 6 sub-levels within the Flooded City level. There were some other levels, such as some, if anyone has played like the game, It's like other levels, like maybe like a mall you go through, but I didn't actually work in like the mall section of like Flooded City, like the exterior, like the interior. That was actually like a different level team that actually worked in that level. And myself when I worked on the sub levels for Flooded City, I worked with Peyton Barney, who was like the texture artist I was paired up with working on the like the Flooded City. And generally, I was responsible for like the entire architectural, pretty much just layout, like the entire at least the sub levels that I worked on and so forth. I was responsible for like, you know, set dressing and world building, like the entire scene. I made some of the environmental props, like maybe like anything that's maybe like a tile texture or like a trim. I made that in house. But then we have like something like maybe like more specific, which I'm gonna get to. For anyone that's played like the game, this is like a bookstore that actually you progress through, like I guess like maybe like earlier, like I guess playing like Flooded City. And if you look at this level, it's just like a lot of one-off assets. It's like any other studio that you talk to. We do some outsourcing, huh? We, you know what I mean? And we do outsource, I guess, like one-off props. If some of these one-off props are going to be like, you know, like very, very time-consuming to make. See, I'm sculpting like or baking down like some super fancy sculpture of some figure like in the game. I'm not going to make that in-house. I'm going to actually send that to outsource, like an outsource on my house, and they're going to do it for me. And then I'm going to implement it and integrate it in whenever I get that asset comes back in. So, I mean, some asset like that might be a little bit time consuming. Why am I going to be spending like maybe 2 or 3 days making like a sculpting and baking down like this asset when I can just outsource it? And while that's happening, I can continue pretty much developing and constructing like the rest of the level. If you look at this scene, there's like a lot of I should have scrolled down. So I guess if we look at this image, just like a lot of maybe like a unique assets in here, like maybe say like the books or like maybe like the actual media, like maybe some CDs or some DVD cases scattered throughout like the entire game. I didn't make those. Those were outsourced. Generally, myself and Peyton were responsible for the construction, like the level. And we outsourced assets. But these assets were, these props were like outsourced, like I guess like different outsource house, and I'm not too sure like the names of, but generally, yeah, it was just mostly us creating like the entire level. It's just generally just at Naughty Dog, at least generally the environment level artist or environment modeler in the environment texture artist with I guess like the support that we get is just pretty much like the assets that are outsourced. But as far as some in-house, I don't think we have like an actual internal prop team. We pretty much just, you know, outsource that. I think and it's not like a Naughty Dog thing. It's just like a lot of studios do that. Like in general, whatever they can outsource, they'll outsource, and we can save some time while the actual level artist is actually constructing and building like the level. And like in maybe like anything like dynamic, like in the actual game, we have like an internal like dynamic foreground team. Say we want to maybe break like a column that actually breaks apart as you shoot it. That's something that we work with internally with our, I guess, like our foreground dynamic team. And they take care of that and then they give it to us. And then we actually place it like in the actual like the actual level. But pretty much, well, going back to your question, it's just primarily just the environment level artists and the environment texture artists creating like the levels. And like I mentioned before, I think I've worked on 5 or 6 Flooded City sub levels, and there were like some other teams that they worked on different sub levels on Flooded City. And if you actually play like the game, Flooded City is like one of like the longer, biggest, like I guess like levels throughout the through like the entire game, so it kind of required like a few teams to work like in different sub levels of the actual level. But as far as like the other teams, they pretty much just had like the same pipeline workflow that we had. One environment modeler and one texture artist, and they outsource whatever they needed to outsource, whatever props were needed to be outsourcing them. We implemented those props whenever we received it on our end. Whenever they came back. But in Insomniac, I guess. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's always interesting.
Oh, I was going to mention what I said. Insomniac. I wasn't too sure. I was going to say, yeah, when I was in Insomniac, it was a little bit different. I was kind of like an environment art generalist. I was pretty much just constructing like the quadrants, like the open world via my sections by myself. You know, pretty much I was just, you know, integrating assets, and I'm outsourcing whatever assets I could get from outsourcing. I was, you know, placing those in. So that's like a different pipeline than the dual pipeline that Naughty Dog has.
Yeah, it's always interesting to kind of hear different methods of achieving the same goals. I think out of all the studios, I'm a lot more used to what you guys are doing, where you kind of have like an environment team take care of a whole level, basically. It wasn't until I went to like Sledge at COD where I saw why they're able to ship games every 3 years. They dogpile a bunch of senior environment artists for a campaign level into like 3-4 equal parts. And so what you end up within the year, instead of spending like a year and a half or 2 years on one level, a senior environment artist would be within that year and a half work on four different campaign levels. And those campaign levels will actually wrap up in like 6 months, which is crazy, right?
Damn. Wow.
Yeah.
That's so aggressive.
Like the dogpiling, I guess, is very unique to Activision. And when I was there, I was very, my eyes were really open because I was used to kind of like what you're saying, like, hey, this is your level. This is, you got your texture guy. You maybe got a tech guy to help you and a level designer. Mm-hmm. All right. You guys will be from pre-production to full production to bug fixing on this level's your life. Right. Which is cool because there's a huge sense of ownership, but also a huge weight in liability, right? Like if this level sucks, there's no one, you're it, right? But it's kind of also to see the other side where you're dogpiling a level and you're seeing these levels like finish faster, which helps with making decisions and not having to redo things. That's the biggest benefit I saw, right? Like you get to see it really fast from beginning to end, and don't have to worry about if it's going to work or not. It has to work, right? We have six people. Mm-hmm. We have like 12 people on this level right now. We're going to finish this in smugs. So whatever design decides, that's the way it is, right? So of course, the other way, and this is from my own personal experience. I don't know how you guys work. You know, designers would just tinker. So like in a year and a half, the level can totally change, or an area level can really change.
Yeah.
And the art team did a lot of work already. And we, a lot of the time it's just me in there just reworking it to the new layout, which can be very.
Yeah, that happens in any game. In
that happens a lot. Yep. Happens a lot. So at least with Call of Duty games, I was like, wow. The design, maybe they will change it a little, but it's done. Like we're done. We're moving on. So it's like it kind of forces people to make decisions really fast. So it's always nice to have like that Call of Duty deadline people make fun of and developers kind of hate it. But there's an efficiency there that you can't mess around in a corner too long. You have to move on. And I think for game developers, that's very important. Otherwise, we're stuck in long dev cycles, right? Because there's this loop that we don't have a finished level to know how Last of Us 2 feels like, right? So we got to wait till a year and a half to know what that feels like. But you guess what? You know, a year and a half later, I don't really like how this feels. So it's always interesting to see like two different sides of development. And when you were talking about that, it's like, oh yeah, that's right. That's how it used to be. Because the last big games I've worked on were the Call of Duty.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's kind of like the studio, like every single studio has a different identity, culture, pipeline.
Right. So it's no better or worse. It's just different. And it is nice to be able to kind of look at a level campaign and be like, I did that, right? With help with others, but I was in there trying to decide, lay out things. A lot of this was my decision. So there's a benefit in pro. I mean, there's a senior problem, which is cool. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just game development, just like a very iterative process, and it just happens.
So I think we're around the hour mark, and I know your time is super valuable. I just want to kind of wrap it up with asking. No, it seems like at least across your last 3-4 jobs, specifically in the PS4 era of game development, environment design have been maybe a few tweaks and changes, but have been kind of the same, right? Nothing really changed from you working on 1886 to Last of Us 2. Is that a fair assessment, or would you say otherwise?
PlayStation 4, no, went up. Obviously, since we're making a place, obviously the PlayStation 4 is like a much more powerful console than the PlayStation 3. And I'm like, yes, I've worked on three PlayStation 4 games right now. So I'm kind of, I'm not an engineer, not a programmer, but I'm kind of, you know, knowledgeable, familiar with the way that I'm things I'm systemically and I'm you know, working so forth. But yes, generally it's been I kind of know now, you know what I mean? Well, I've kind of known how I'm to make art to cater to like the PlayStation 4 hardware, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? I know I'm pretty much just, you know, like quite aware about, you know what I mean, trying to be as resourceful as possible and trying to maximize like the amount of textures that I'm actually using like in the scene, you know, trying to reduce like I guess like the unique draw calls that are actually being rendered or called upon like in a level or like in a scene, you know what I mean, try to keep the geometry, I guess, like efficient, you know what I mean, and making it look good at the same time. So because I've worked on three PS4 games, yes, it's kind of like the same hardware. It's been kind of I kind of, you know, I kind of know how to cater like the art for the for that hardware. But obviously, you know, going into like PlayStation 5 or, you know, moving on to PlayStation or Xbox Series X and PS5, you know what I mean? It's going to be different hardware. And obviously, when the developers adapt to their hardware, I mean, like the pipeline might change or it might just be the same thing. It's just, you know what I mean? It might just be like, I guess, like higher resolution textures.
Yeah, so that you're actually leading into my last question right there. It's like, what is the biggest shift that you foresee for the PS5 for environment artists? You know, we're dealing 4K, 8K textures, bigger rooms, more photogrammetry.
Pretty much just, pretty much just imagine higher resolution textures, pretty much, you know, bigger levels, maybe like more open world, like more open space levels, more like unique assets like on the scenes. Maybe like more like NPCs or, you know, like actual characters running around like the level and so forth. More dynamic art, like maybe like more exploding windows or cracking windows or exploding columns, like maybe more you know, more vehicles like on screen. I just see like more you know, just more of what maybe what wasn't capable of, like on the actual like the PlayStation 4. And I think we've been kind of seeing that now, even like in games like maybe like Call of Duty. As I guess like the developers are kind of like understanding and grasping like the hardware more, coming towards like the end of the actual tail end of the actual generation, like the actual developers actually have a better understanding of like the hardware. You're seeing things like maybe more like in Call of Duty, like more like a higher player count, like a playing like Warzone, or am I seeing like more vehicles on screen? So I just see like more of that going into like the next generation, just more whatever we couldn't do in the current generation.
Yeah, it's very exciting stuff, obviously. And you being a first party studio at Naughty Dog for Sony, you're at the forefront of figuring this stuff out and telling the rest of us how to do it for the PS5. So it's awesome. Great stuff. Like, I guess I would want to ask you that, right? So let me think. So I haven't had an experience of working for a first party, right? Most of my have been third party. So I never worked for Microsoft or Sony or Nintendo, right? So did you see any differences there? Any major differences, pros and benefits, mostly pros, I guess, working at a first party studio, or is mostly the same?
So yeah, I guess I'm working at Naughty Dog. It's been kind of like the first party studio I've ever worked for. I mean, I worked in Insomniac, and I worked in Reddit on, and they had a relationship with Sony. Now, I mean, Insomniac is first party. They got bought out by Sony. But as far as like working at the hardware, it's pretty much like the same thing. Maybe just working like in an internal studio, you get like maybe more perks by the actual first party, say Nintendo or Microsoft or swag. You know what I mean? I think you or Nintendo or you know Microsoft or Sony, you get like maybe like more swag. But as far as the actual development pipeline, from what I've noticed, it's kind of like the same. You know what I mean? We still have like, I guess, like internal milestones and deadlines that we have to hit. You know what I mean? If the marketing team is asking for something, we kind of have to like the studio kind of has to give him something to show off to like start promoting like the game, start marketing like the game. And I've noticed the production cycle is just kind of like the same. I mean, it's not like we get any special treatment or anything like that. We're first party. Naughty Dog is first party, but in a way, we're kind of treated. It's an independent studio, and in any internal Sony studio, just kind of operates independently from Sony. Even though they're owned by Sony, every single studio just has like their own culture, their own identity, and even like their own pipeline. Like I mentioned, Naughty Dog, we're very specialized as far as like the art pipeline. But maybe if you go like maybe Sony Santa Monica, they're not as specialized. I think over there, I guess like the environment artists are like maybe are still like modeling and texturing like the at the same time. So I didn't see like any much difference working like in a first party studio and a third party studio, besides just maybe you know a little swag like every now and then. You know what I mean, like maybe like you know Sony perks and stuff like that. But that's about it. But as far as the actual production, it's about the same.
Yeah, the only reference I can go back to is maybe 2K because they're a publisher as well. And like you said, the swags where there's anything 2K related, and in your case, Sony related, that happens in the world, you would go to the kitchen and you just see these shirts and mugs and stuff, and it's a free grab for all. Like at 2K especially, we were at a studio with, you know, where they make the NBA games. So we would either see the celebrities walking in, or we would just see a lot of basketball games or games from other studios just be sitting right there in the lounge that everybody can grab. So I was a little spoiled when I was there because I thought that's how everyone does it, only to find out that that's not the case. People don't really give out free shit unless they're doing really well. So well, I want to say this, man, and if you want to turn back your webcam so we can see your lovely face, it's been a pleasure here talking to you again. Let's keep in touch, man, especially in this pandemic era. I'm finding myself like talking to people on phones, doing things I never used to do. Just to kind of get that social reinteraction. Yeah. But before I say
that, lots of teleconferences and support.
Yeah, definitely. So why don't you tell the good people? Yeah, we know we had your art station up. Where else can people find you if they want to follow up? Maybe not ask you a question, but just to follow you.
Well, you can definitely follow me, and I'm definitely on my art station. I think I'm always constantly updating my art station. If you want to connect, I'm also on LinkedIn. I mean, you can always send me like a connection invite if you want to invite. I guess if you want to, you know, get to know me more, ask me questions, you can just email me or send me messages directly through my art station or even LinkedIn. People do message me. Sometimes I can't immediately respond. I make an effort. I do my best to respond, but just sometimes I just can't respond immediately. And it might be a little bit before I get back to you, but I do make the effort to get back to you if you have any questions or so forth. So yeah, primarily ArtStation, and and I'm LinkedIn. I mean, it's other communities out there. Like maybe I'm, I don't know, like maybe Polycount. I'm not very active on Polycount. I do go on there and look at art sometimes, but I'm mostly, you know, active on ArtStation. I think ArtStation is now kind of like the primary hub for, like, I guess, you know, artists for like the art community. And there's also like CG Hub or CG Talk, but I'm I think it's been like over a decade since I last updated that. So yeah, if you definitely want to reach out to me or see what I'm working on, definitely ArtStation or LinkedIn are the two primary forms of contacts.
Awesome, man. Well, it's great talking to you, Mister. I'll talk to you a little bit after we get off.
Awesome.
But yeah, don't bother Nestor too much. Just follow Mars, connect him on LinkedIn. He's always been gracious with his time, obviously, spending this last hour with us. And man, I can't wait to see what you do next, dude. Super excited. Always great work that I see coming from you. All right, man.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited. I'm whatever I'm working on, you know, internally your personal projects, I'm pretty excited myself. But yeah, I'll be updating my fire station. And yeah, thanks for having me. Maybe we can do this again some other time. Who knows?
Hell yeah, man. Last of Us 3. I'll see you in 5-8. All right, so I'm going to log off. Thanks, you guys. Have a good one.